There are some more points about commas in lists before we move on. In a list of adjectives, again the rule is that you use a comma where an and would be appropriate. That is, where the adjectives are all modifying the same thing to the same degree. For example, it was a dark, comma, stormy night. In other words, the night was dark and stormy. But you don't use a comma for, it was an endangered white rhino. This is because here the adjectives are doing their jobs in joyful combination. They aren't intended as a list. Then commas are used when two complete sentences are joined together with such conjunctions as and, or, but, while, and yet. For example, the boys wanted to stay up until midnight, comma, but they grew tired and fell asleep. Trouble arises with this joining comma rule from two directions. First, when stylists deliberately omit the conjunction and just keep the comma, this is the so-called splice comma that John Updike is accused of, and secondly, when the wrong joining words are used. The splice comma first. It was the Queen's birthday on Saturday, comma, she got a lot of presents. Now, so many highly respected writers adopt the splice comma that a rather unfair rule emerges. Only do it if you're as famous as Samuel Beckett, E.M. Forster or Somerset Maugham. Done knowingly by an established writer, the comma splice is effective, poetic, dashing. Done ignorantly by ignorant people, it's awful. Meanwhile, words that mustn't be used to join two sentences together with a comma are however and nevertheless, as in, it was the Queen's birthday on Saturday, comma, nevertheless, comma, she had no post, whatever. What's needed is either a new sentence or a semicolon. It was the Queen's birthday on Saturday, semicolon, nevertheless, comma, she had no post, whatever. Commas can be used before direct speech, though many writers prefer to use colons. Others just open the speech marks, a pretty unambiguous sign that direct speech is coming. Personally, I seem to ring the changes, though it would be a shame to see this use of the comma go. The Queen said, comma, open speech marks, doesn't anyone know it's my birthday? Close speech marks. Then there are the commas that come in pairs. The first rule of bracketing commas is that you use them to mark both ends of what's inserted. The commas indicate the places where the reader can, as it were, place an elegant two-pronged fork and cleanly lift out a section of the sentence, leaving no obvious damage to the whole. Thus, the Queen, comma, who has double the number of birthdays of most people, comma, celebrated yet another birthday. The bit between the commas can be removed, leaving the sentence arguably less interesting, but grammatically entire. Incidentally, there is actual mental cruelty involved in opening up a pair of commas and then neglecting to deliver the closing one. The reader hears the first shoe drop and then strains in agony to hear the second. Take the example, the Highland Terrier is the cutest, comma, and perhaps the best of all dog species. Sensitive people trained to listen for the second comma after best find themselves quite stranded by that kind of thing. They feel cheated. However, why is it that sometimes these pairs of commas are incorrect? Consider the difference between the people in the queue who managed to get tickets were very satisfied, no commas, and the people in the queue, comma, who managed to get tickets, comma, were very satisfied. In the first case, the reader infers from the absence of commas that not everyone in the queue was fortunate. Some people didn't get tickets. The people in the queue who managed to get tickets were very satisfied. In the second version, everyone in the queue gets tickets. Hurrah! The people in the queue, comma, who managed to get tickets, comma, were very satisfied. The issue here is whether the bit between the commas is defining or not. If the clause is defining, you don't need to present it with a pair of commas.